Howdy do, Who fans, and welcome to the Big Blue Box Podcast. My name's Gary.
My name's Adam.
And this is episode 302.
Oh, yes.
One day, I shall come back. Yes, I shall come back. Until then, there must be no regrets, no tears, no anxieties. Just go forward in all your beliefs and prove to me that I am not mistaken in mine.
Our lives are different to anybody else's. That's the exciting thing. Nobody in the universe can do what we're doing.
I've reversed the polarity of the neutron flow, so the TARDIS should be free of the force field now.
You may be a doctor, but I'm the doctor. The definite article, you might say.
But the trouble with time travel is, one never seems to find the time.
Change, my dear. And it seems on a moment too soon.
Unlimited rice pudding, etc., etc.
I am the doctor.
For now, for this moment, I am the doctor again.
The ground beneath our feet is spinning at 1,000 miles an hour. And the entire planet is hurtling around the sun at 67,000 miles an hour. And I can feel it. We're falling through space, you and me.
People assume that time is a strict progression of cause to effect. But actually, from a non-linear, non-subjective view, it's more like a big ball of wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff.
I could be a curator. I'd be great at curating. I'd be the great curator.
I could retire and do that.
I'm the doctor. I've lived for over 2,000 years, and not all of them were good. I've made many mistakes, and it's about time that I did something about that.
Bit of adrenaline, dash of outrage, and a hint of panic knitted my brain back together. I know exactly who I am. I'm the Doctor. Sorting out fair play throughout the universe.
Hey, 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 Who fans. Welcome back to the Big Blue Box Podcast. Hope you're all well, keeping safe and healthy. You've had a cracking week. No, you've all managed to do something Doctor Who related. Indeed. Yeah. Welcome back, Bod.
Yes, it's a shame that our listeners couldn't see what I just had to see. Gary was busting some right moves there during the intro, listeners. It's a shame you couldn't see that. That'll live in my memory for a while.
You've got to
always
do it.
Have you had an extra strong coffee this morning? Or
I'm on my second cup.
Oh,
thanks for asking.
Yeah. It was like being in a nightclub in the early 2000s. You can just imagine the big old discotheque lighting system above him. And he was throwing some right shapes, he was.
You've got to go for it.
Yeah, I couldn't. Yeah, I was trying to muster up the energy to join you, but I was a bit like the guy in the club who sort of wants to get on the dance floor but hasn't quite had enough drinks yet.
No, you just finger bogle down
just
on the table.
Sort of, did a little shuffle.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it wasn't as good. It wasn't as good. I'll see if I can do better next week.
Well, it is hump day, isn't it? It's Wednesday.
Yeah.
You got to go for it.
Exactly.
Yes.
But yeah, I'm good, man. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Not too bad. Can't complain. Welcome back to our listeners, of course. Hope you're doing well. Keeping healthy. Another week. Another podcast, eh? Those of you that have jumped on board recently, if you just discovered the show, you've come across it in Spotify or Apple Podcasts or whatever app you listen on, it's welcome. It's good to have you here. Those of you that have come back, well, been our long-time listeners, the old grizzled ancients, welcome back as well. For another week of Doctor Who. Adam and I were talking earlier that it definitely feels like Doctor Who is on a bit of a slow go, a go slow. A goage slow at the moment. In not just us, but, you know, Doctor Who in general, across media and podcasts and stuff like that. Just thank God that Big Finish are still churning out plenty of stuff, you know.
I'll tell you what, I normally order, so at the end of every month, I'll order the next month's releases because they take the payment straight away. So we'll sort of leave it to the last minute towards them. And so I'll sort of order what I want each at the end of each month. And I looked at this month and there was about four things I wanted. I thought, well, I can't afford all that. So I had to cherry pick and I literally spent hours. I kept adding things to the basket, then thinking, oh no, that's too much. Anyway, I thought that was bad. I looked at the following month and I was just like, OMG. Like, there is so much good stuff coming out over the next couple of months. There's like this Dalek Universe stuff, which looks good. There's the new Ninth Doctor stuff as well is coming out soon, which I'm really excited about with Chris Eccleston. They got some great stuff at the minute. The ones I've just ordered are the two Fourth Doctor Lost Stories, and I must admit I've sort of drifted away a bit from the Lost Stories just because there's so much stuff coming out that I've had to really rein in how much I buy. But I listened to the trailers of them and they just both sounded really, really good. So it's like Return of the Cybermen and I forgot what the other one's called, but so two Fourth Doctor stories that never got made. And then what clinched it was, I thought the trailers sound good and I was still trying to decide. So I looked up a bit of the sort of, you know, I looked up on Wiki, like why they were never made. What's the story behind these lost stories? Why were they never made? And they both sounded really interesting. So like Return of the Cybermen is like actually an early draft of Revenge of the Cybermen. But it's apparently it was heavily rewritten and it's kind of like the original version of it. And I thought, well, that sounds good to see how different it is from what we actually ended up getting. And the other story, which I've completely forgotten the name of it, just sounded good as well. So I ordered them and I took out, so they're doing a release, which is the last monthly range release they're doing, the stop in the monthly range. And I was going to get that because it features Colin, Peter, Sylve, and who's the other doctor? Oh, McGann.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like a multi-doctor story. And I was going to get that and I thought, no, I can't afford that. So I took that one out of the basket. But yeah, Big Finish, they are just loving life at the minute, I think. You know, they're releasing so much good stuff.
They're a machine, yeah. Mate.
And I love the fact they've got Tennant on board. And I have to say, he is so good on Big Finish. It's because it sometimes, a bit like River and stuff, even sometimes the stories that are good, they can be a bit gimmicky now, a little bit. And I find they overdo some of the stuff, you know, like River's been in pretty much everything. And so it's a little bit overkill. But I have to say, David really nails it on audio. I'm really looking forward to the Dalek Universe stuff, even though I'm bored to death of the Daleks. I listened to the trailers and the artwork and stuff is amazing. And I'm still going to get it. I'm still quite excited for Dalek Universe. So, but yeah, Tennant's knocking out of the park on Big Finish. He just sounds like he's loving it. I think you said it. You can tell that he just loves being the Doctor, and that's never going to go away, I don't think.
No, I don't. Not anytime soon.
No.
He loves it.
Yeah.
But yeah, Big Finish can always rely on them, especially in periods like now where it's a wee bit quiet for everybody and not much going on. So if you want to get your fix of Doctor Who, as we always say, just go over and even if you've never listened to any Big Finish before, this if you're a bit... Because it can be a bit daunting, can't it, when you go onto the Big Finish website and there's just thousands of stories. And not just the main run, you've got all the spin-offs and short trips and there's so much stuff on there. Just kind of start with your fave doctor, I guess. Whoever your favourite doctor is, just seek them out. Maybe pick up a few stories. And also keep an eye on the sale as well. The Big Finish have always got offers on.
Yes, they do, yeah.
So keep an eye on that as well. And, just dive in. Just pick up a couple of stories. You can get some... I imagine you can get some really good stories now for quite cheap. I mean, even if you wanted to go back and listen to some of the early stuff. So I think in the first few years that they were pushing stuff out, they've stopped making them on CD. But you can pick up the downloads now for really cheap. I think only a couple of quid. £3.
£2.99, I think. Yeah, something like that. Some great stories, yeah.
Ah, some amazing stuff from back then. And even like then some of the newer stuff, just keep your eye out for some offers and whatnot. But no, it's good. Big Finish, it's good.
The one I had to take out my basket, I was quite intrigued. Again, the trailer kind of sold it to me, was they're releasing a box set next month called Master with Eric Roberts. So it's the first sort of proper full collection with him as the Master. And it just sounds like this is what Big Finish do so well. I mean, a lot of people will say, oh, he was a terrible Master. I don't like the TV movie. I like the TV movies, everyone knows. And I think he had great potential as a Master. And they just sound like they've really made him quite dark and sinister going by the trailer. And I must admit, I would have liked to have got that set because I'm quite intrigued by it. But unfortunately, it didn't quite make the cut this month. I couldn't afford it. Couldn't afford it. But maybe in the future, because like you said, they're always doing offers and stuff. They seem to be phasing out their CDs quite a lot, I've noticed. I mean, I guess because they do produce so much, their warehouse is probably at bursting point. But I have noticed they've done a lot of sales recently where they're like, if you want the physical thing, this is, we're not going to be repressing this. It's the last chance to get it on CD and then it'll be download only. They're definitely going more towards download only, which is fine because you're a download guy, aren't you? I mean, I like the old, I like to clutter up my room with CDs, but some good stuff. I've never got into the Torchwood though, and I hear they're great. That's another series I'd really like to delve into on Big Finish at some point. But again, there's so many now that I'm so far behind. But there's one coming up with Tennant called Absent Friends, which sounds pretty good. So yeah, I might grab that one.
Yeah. Most of the Torchwood stuff is pretty decent.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people say it's really good. They've done a great job with Torchwood on a Big Finish. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So go and check out Big Finish, dudes. Before we I haven't done anything myself, Doctor Who, by the way. I've carried on a little bit with the Script Doctor book. Still loving that.
Oh, it's great, isn't it?
It's all good. Yeah, have you done anything Doctor Who-wise?
Not a great deal, no. Yeah. I just was going to ask you if you'd seen the new trailer for the Season 8 box set, which is coming out next Monday. Yay. Next Monday, Gary!
Yay!
Because I was thinking, I've been quite... this week's just been a bit of a slog, really. And I was thinking, now I need something to watch. And then I was like, this time next week, we should have the Season 8 box set in our hands. And then we're going to have a whole wealth of extras to go through, and I cannot wait. But yeah, they've released a new trailer for it, which is really, really good. And have you seen it? I think it only dropped yesterday.
Yeah, on the YouTube, the official YouTube channel. Yeah.
Yes. Really, really good trailer, and it just got me so buzzed. I mean, I'm buzzing anyway, but I'm ultra buzzing for the Season 8 set now. Have you ordered it?
I have, mate. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, of course you have. Yeah, silly question. Yeah, so that's, yeah, really looking forward to that. Dropping through the door. Apart from that, not a lot. I've been in a quandary about Phantom have started up their events again. They're doing one in April. Katie Manning's there, Richard Franklin, and John Levine. The usual suspects. And a lot of the people we know, like a lot of our friends, have booked it, and they were all sort of saying, are you coming? And I was like, I don't know. To me, I just wondered how you felt about this. It still feels a little bit soon to be like, it was more the thought of jumping on the train and having to get the tube and stuff. I just don't know if I'm ready to quite go back to mixing with all those people yet. But I mean, the Phantom events are very well organized. I have to say they do a brilliant job of keeping you distance, and they only let a tiny amount of people in. You have to book a time slot. It's really well managed. So I'm not worried about the actual event itself, but I don't know. I kept going to book it because I really want to go back to a convention, and I love their photos because they have the TARDIS prop and everything, and love to see Katie. But I just, every time I went to book it, I was just like, I don't know if I'm quite ready to go back into the, back into the world yet and to start doing conventions. I don't know, but so I haven't booked it, and I think it's sold out now, but yeah, I might wait, I think, and go to the next one.
Oh, okay.
But it's great to see them guys starting up again. It all feels like everything's happening a bit too soon to me. I just worry we're going to end up, you know, rushing things and going back into lockdown, which is the last thing we're on.
You know? No, Richard, dude. Yeah, for me, I agree. I think it's a wee bit, a tad too soon for that stuff.
Well, like I said, the favourite, the bit I love, I wouldn't be able to do, and that would be because I know quite a few people are going. And I said, yeah, but I love the cons, but my favourite bit is seeing everyone after and us all going for a drink and chatting about the event. And I said, we won't be able to do that because we're not allowed to socialise and the pubs won't be open. So that kind of sealed it. I was like, no, I can't. It'll feel, I don't know. I'll wait till we can go and have a pint together.
Okay. Yeah, no, I read you. I think the Showmasters dudes, I think Comic-Con, they're still doing it for July.
They say they are, yeah.
Yeah.
Same thing though. I can't imagine I can't see myself going to a big con like that. I mean, I can see myself going to Phantom because they're so intimate and tiny and well managed, but I can't see myself going to a big old Showmasters event anytime soon, I don't think.
No, I read you. Yeah, I think the Phantom ones, yeah, it's pretty sweet because they could probably manage that, like you said, a bit better with distancing and all that stuff, but not a chance at the Olympia. I don't even know if they're going to... So there's no word on their website around if they're going to be doing any like limiting the amount of tickets they're going to sell to try and maintain some kind of distancing once you get in there. They haven't said that. All they've said is, yeah, go on here, buy your tickets, go for your life sort of thing and knock yourself out. It seems a little bit...
Yeah, I know. I thought that.
The end of July, I mean, we're going to be... It's the last weekend of July. It's practically August. According to... I mean, I guess they're just going on like government advice and stuff. The government are saying by that point, I think everybody in the UK should have had at least their first COVID jab, supposedly. And it should be under control by then. So they're probably just, I don't know. But the danger is having enough volunteers at something like that to make sure that people are behaving themselves. That's the thing, you know, because at the smaller events, it doesn't really take that many people. Really, it only takes one person to stand on top of it, to get up on a chair and say, "Oi, you lot, 2 meters, whatever."
And how can they have people? You know, they always have those grumpy people sat next to the starts telling you, "Can't do this, you can't do that, don't smile, don't take photos." How they can't have a person sat with them unless they're going to be really spread out. Yeah. So they'll have the celebrity there, and then 2 meters, they'll have the person who's watching over everything, and then they'll. I don't know how that works. Yeah, I just don't know how they can work around it.
Yeah, not sure. Unless, like, the volunteers have had a test beforehand and all that.
Yeah, we could be in a different place in July. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, let's keep optimistic. Let's. Yeah. But you know my thoughts now, listeners, long-time listeners will know my thoughts on the Olympia as a venue. I couldn't stand it before COVID. So that's going to be interesting. But £25, dude, for a ticket.
Yeah.
£25 if you want to go in on just the... £25, mate.
Bloody just to get in the door?
Just for one day. £25 on the Saturday. No. I remember back in the day when we first started going to Comic-Con, you used to rock up on the day. You didn't have to pre-book. Pay your £5, in you go.
Yeah, I remember those days. Well, I can actually remember doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Now look, I have to pre-book.
£25, eh?
Yeah. Did they give you a discount for the 3 day? Yeah, they do. £60 for the 3 days. Yeah, I suppose, you know, you can't put a price on entertainment, I suppose.
The only thing that will lure me in is I am quite keen to meet Sasha Dwan. And he is still listed, isn't he? Mm-hmm. Oh, and that could tempt me in. But as I said, I'll see what frame of mind I'm in by July. But that's the only thing at the minute that's kind of luring me in, is because I'd really like to meet him and get a photo with him. Mm. That would be cool. Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see. But yeah, I'm just to go back to what you're saying about Series 8, I'm really looking forward to that. The status on zoom.co.uk now says sent to warehouse. So that's a good sign.
That's cool. I was going to say, it's amazing. It's been sold out for weeks as well. It's like sold out everywhere. It's just brilliant, isn't it, that Classic Who is still so popular. And the BBC must be like just loving it, the fact that at least some of their merch is still selling. You know, it's incredible that it's been sold out, you know, and it's not even out yet. It's not even been released and it's sold out everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So there we go. That's our views. That's our views on what you should and shouldn't do, show organisers. Well, listen. Before we move on, we haven't got any news to speak of, but I did want to mention very briefly, in our last week's show, we spoke about, I think it was The Express or somebody put an article out about all the different names that are going into the ring for the new Doctor, and the bookies are starting to put odds on things. There's been another couple of names just thrown in.
Oh, who we got?
Yeah, so John Barrowman did an interview with Metro.
He gets around, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. He said he wants to see a transgender Doctor.
Okay, yeah.
He wants that to happen, which is good. And then he was on, I think it was the Lorraine show, I think. And he said that he thinks Ollie Alexander, who stars in the recent It's a Sin Russell Davies show, he thinks he would be a great actor. He says he's quirky, he's fun, he's a lovely actor, and I think he would make a wonderful Doctor.
Do you know, he would actually. He was really good in It's a Sin, and I was surprised how good his acting is, because he's, you know, he's from a boy band, isn't he? And you think, oh, but, you know, not to prejudge, but I wasn't expecting his acting to be Stella, I thought he'd be probably all right. But he was a really good little actor, actually. And hadn't thought about him as the Doctor, but he would be cool. He would be cool, yeah. Good shout, John Barrowman.
Yeah, not too bad. And then then there was another bunch of ridiculousness that was thrown up. So apparently, Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh, I've heard her mentioned before, yeah. As the Doctor. Yeah.
Once again, apparently. And this is from the horse's mouth. She has actually said that she's thrown her name in the ring. She has said that she would love to play the role and has contacted.
Would she?
Yeah, she wants to do it big time.
Oh, get her in. She'd probably be really good, actually. She'd certainly be quite feisty. I'd like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. She'd be interesting, yeah.
Yeah. And that was pretty much it, really. The other couple of names mentioned was Chris Marshall again and Michaela Cole. I don't know who that is, but...
I know Michaela Strachan. I don't know.
That would be an interesting choice. No,
is she still around? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, she's still knocking around. Yeah.
It feels to me, I know there are people saying, we don't want Jodie to leave and all that, and that's fine. But to me, it feels like Chibbers and Jodie have been around. It feels like they've been around forever. I personally just want something fresh. I want both gone and let's have something new.
Yeah, Regia.
And
then, the article went on to say, it's just sort of reinforced what some of the other reports have said of late, which is, according to insiders, every single person on the production in Doctor Who world knows that Jodie is leaving. Everybody knows, apparently. And it just seems strange that the BBC have not officially said what's going on, because we're in this situation again, which we've had a couple of times with Doctors leaving, where the entire production team know that the actor is leaving. It's been leaked and the sources have been fairly decent. So the entire world knows that the actor is leaving as well. But you've got this kind, it's almost like the kid at school who says they know a secret, but they won't tell anybody. But everybody knows what it is anyway, but they just want some attention. They want to be the kid that's like, oh, come on, please tell us. And they're like, nope, I shan't tell you, but I know what it is. It's kind of like that sort of thing. The BBC are like, yep, you all know, and we all know that you know, but we want you to just, we're just going to leave you to stew for a while and we want some attention. So it's a bit weird, but.
I reckon they probably haven't announced it because they're probably gearing up some. I mean, I don't know if we'll get a little teaser video like we did with Jodie announcing the new Doctor. I hope we'll get something. So it might be that they're sort of waiting to put that out there and they don't want to put it out. Maybe they don't want to put that out before series 13. And also they might use it to hype up season 13. So they might, because we at this point, we still think we're getting it this year. Am I right?
I think so, mate.
Yeah, apparently. So if we are getting it this year, they might use it to hype up, but they'll be like, oh, this is Jodie's last series and she's going to regenerate and everyone's going to watch it to see how she leaves. And so maybe they're just using it for that. I don't know. There must be a reason why they haven't told us, but I know what you mean. Yeah. It does. It's like everybody knows.
Not just you. Everybody knows.
Imagine if it isn't true, though. God, imagine if it isn't.
Oh, that would be hilarious, wouldn't it?
She hangs on. She's clinging on to the wreckage right the way up to the 60th.
But then you'd get the conspiracy theorists like, oh, it was all a plan, it was a publicity stunt by the Beeb to purposely leak a bit of false info and the world went nuts. And yeah. That's not the Beeb style.
No, it's not.
One person, I guess, is absolutely seething, though. It's probably Chibbers, because he hates anything on the inside getting over the wall, doesn't he? He hates it.
Yeah.
Oh, I bet he's doing his nut. Jodie, what are you doing?
Oh, Chibbers. I just remember when Jodie was first announced and they were at that American convention on stage, and you just could tell that they weren't allowed to say anything, and you could almost feel Chibnall, over her shoulder, like, don't say anything, don't tell them anything. It was just like so awkward.
Dude, you're funny. Like San Diego Comic-Con, the biggest con in the world, and you're like, oh yeah, that American convention. You know,
I think
that event they went to, you know, that American thing.
I think that's what I'm thinking of. Yeah,
it was. Yeah. But yeah, you could see Chibbers was like, he had his eagle eyes and his ears were like, you know, when a cat angles its ears to hear everything, he was like that. He was making
sure.
Yeah. You're a bat. Yeah.
I mean, I'll never get over the promotional shot that we got for the last Dalek one. Is it what's it called? I can't remember.
Recipes.
Yeah, it was a picture of them sat around the table. I mean, that is Chibnall all over, and it's like, give us, what can we let them have? You know, we've built up all this hype. What promotional images can we get to whet their appetite? And it was them sat around a blooming table, having a coffee.
Yeah,
oh, it's all he'd give them. It's all he'd let them have.
Well, the execs at the Beeb, they've put a lot of faith in old Chibbers. They've just let him run with it. Oh, well. Right, dude. Nothing else to say on that front. So let's crack on. What we got for review this week?
Yeah, so 10th Doctor this week, the Doctor and Donna in Partners in Crime.
Adipose Industries, the 21st century way to lose weight.
The fat just walks away.
Exceeding a level 5 plan was against galactic law.
Wait, what's wrong?
Are you threatening me?
Just like old times.
If you don't call this off, then I'll have to stop you.
Oh, I don't think so.
Go on, Murray going for it there, isn't he?
Old Muzzy.
Oh, bombastic Murray Gold there, yeah.
Oh, I missed that. Anyway, Partners in Crime. It was first broadcast back on the 5th of April 2008. It was the kickoff for Series 4. It was written by RTD, directed by James Strong, and stars David Tennant and Catherine Tate. And top billing for cast after those two, surprisingly, Billy Piper. Oof. As Rose Tyler, even though she's in it for literally 7.5 seconds or something.
She doesn't say anything either, does she?
No, she's just got that kind of pouty, teeth done face. And Sarah Lancashire as Miss Foster. Sarah Lancashire, you'll know from a certain
Corrie.
Soap. Is it Corrie? Yep, here in the UK.
Yeah.
She was in that for donkey's years, yep. I think she went on to do some cool stuff, though, once she broke free of the soap thing.
She did a good police drama. I can't remember. Happy Valley or something.
Something like that. Something Valley, yeah. And then she'd done some other stuff. So she broke free of the shackles of being pigeonholed as a soap actress. But and then we had some other people, which we'll come on to. And then the synopsis for this is Donna Noble is determined to find the 10th Doctor again, even if it means braving the villainous Miss Foster. But what the alien threat escalates out of control, can Donna find her Time Lord before the march of the adipose begins at last? I love these official synopsis. It's so funny. So, yeah. Dude, we've had this one mentioned quite a few times. Talking of cons earlier, when we've met people at cons, they often say, when are you going to do Partners in Crime? Because it's a really popular episode, obviously.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, but we're round to it now. So, dude, tell us what your thoughts.
Yeah. This is not an episode I've watched a lot, considering it is quite a popular one. This is probably only the second or third time I've ever watched it. So obviously I watched it when it went out and I enjoyed it, but it didn't leave a very lasting impression on me. It's not one I've gone back to at all, really. So when we did add this to the list, I was quite excited because I thought, oh, yeah, I never really watched that one. And I was wondering is it going to be better than I remember, or do I not watch it because it's not one that I like? And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really good, fun watch. It's not the best story. It's not the strongest story even. But as an introduction to bringing Donna back, it's great. It's a brilliant way to bring her back into the show, and it's a lot of fun. And I think that's the word I would use to describe it as an episode. It's not a strong story, but it's a fun story. And you can just see that RTD is having an absolute blast writing it. I mean, it's just as quirky, you know, the writing is so quirky and stuff. So, yeah, and it's great. I mean, I think I remember, you know, when Catherine was announced that she was coming back as the full-time companion, and like a lot of people, I'd liked her in The Runaway Bride, but couldn't imagine her full-time. I just thought, well, I just can't see how that's going to work. And I remember being worried that perhaps Russell had got a bit comfortable in his Doctor Who chair and thought, right, I've brought it back, I've made it a success, And now I can kind of do what I want with it. And if I want to make it silly and funny, I can. So I was a little bit worried about that. And I think I remember at the time when this went out, going into it, all a little bit sort of tense, thinking, oh, what's it, you know. So there's a lot of comedic moments in this. And at the time, I think I was a bit like, oh, it's not going to be all silly, is it? And yet, watching this again last night, those moments that I worried about at the time are the bits I really enjoyed. So like the stuff where the Doctor and Donna finally see each other through the door window and through the glass and stuff, and all that interaction there, I was just loving it. Where at the time, perhaps I was a little bit, I couldn't quite relax because I was worried where the series was going and was it going to turn into, you know, a bit sort of too, for want of a better phrase, CBeebies. I was like, oh, it's not going to be too silly, is it? And she's not going to be really shouty, is she? And, you know, there's a couple of moments like that in this, but it's nowhere near as over the top as I remembered it. So yeah, a good enjoyable episode. Adipose Q, I don't know if they used as well as they could have been, but I do love the scenes of them, you know, walking across the streets in their thousands. I think the only thing that really lets it down, and I like Sarah Lancashire, I think she's good as Miss Foster, but I kind of feel like she wasn't strong enough as the villain. If anything, she's sort of playing the part a bit too understated. I think she's trying not to be too pantomime, but I think she's actually trying too hard. So I wish she'd sort of gone for it a little bit more, because she's such a great actress, and I don't think she was bad in it, but she's not a big enough villainous presence to create enough threat in the story, and I think that would have sort of brought it up a bit. But yeah, it's a really fun watch. I can see why people like it. I really enjoyed watching it. Yeah.
Cool.
What do you reckon?
Yeah, so my overall thoughts are this is a really good... They were very, very clever with this one, because if you think about the pressure that they were under with this, David Tennant's run, as we know from stats, you know, that are publicly out there, this was when Doctor Who was at its prime. This is like
peak,
maximum peak Doctor Who in terms of popularity, viewing figures, merchandise, all that stuff. Doctor Who was rocking and rolling at this point.
Yep.
So to bring back Donna from the Voyage of the Damned and have her as a permanent entry, it's also, they were attracting a lot of new viewers to the show as well, because it was a, like I said, it was very popular at this point and a talking point along amongst a lot of people. So you had people like, oh, Doctor Who, I'll check that out. So they were really clever with this opening one, because it's just fun from start to finish. It doesn't suffer from the Moffat effect, where it immediately starts to weave in all of this complicated stuff, and it doesn't. The only thing we get, and this is for people who have been watching Doctor Who up to this point, so current fans, was the Rose Tyler cameo right at the end. If you were brand new to the show at that point, you probably thought, who's this girl? So it didn't detract from the episode, and it didn't make you think, oh no, this is another show that I can't watch because I don't know X amount of years or X number of episodes of backstory. It wasn't planted in that way where you were scratching your head too much. It was just like, oh, okay, who's this girl? So obviously fans of the show and current viewers, they would have lost their minds at that point, because Rose was back. She was a very popular companion.
Yeah.
So they were really clever not to go in too hard with any sort of heavy backstory or lore or any time war gumph or, you know, any of that stuff. It's just a real fun, very comedic. I mean, it's definitely style over substance, I would say, in terms of the script, because when you take the Dr. Donna stuff out of the equation, essentially the villain, the baddie alien in this one, she hasn't got any grand plans to take over the world or anything. This is just and as she says in the episode, it's just a surrogacy thing. She just wants all the babies to be expelled as fat, the adipose things, and then they're going to be, in a very lovely Star Trek way, beamed up and off they go. But then there is a slight darker, there's a slightly darker undertone to it, in that in order for all of the adipose to to manifest, that person has to be evaporated into nothingness, basically. So that's like a side effect, but that's not the reason why Miss Foster's doing it. She's not doing it to kill everybody. She's just doing it to get the adipose babies. So that you've got that, you know, and it's very simple. Kids would love this one as well as adults. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to concentrate too hard. You know exactly what's going on. So yeah. I, for that reason alone, I think it's great. I mean, I think Russell did a really good job of just keeping it uber simple to kick off a new series. But then just throwing that little nugget at the end of, you know, Rose is back somehow. You'll have to watch to find out how that transpires. So it was really cool. But then, like I said, it's kind of style over substance. There's nothing really, you know, you're not going to be talking about Miss Foster as like one of the big popular baddies in the show for any, you know, at all, probably. The only thing that you would talk about, and my wife talks about it every now and then when I mention this episode, is just how cute the adipose are.
Yeah, and so, there was a bit of adipose merch, wasn't there? They did those squishy, those
plushy things,
adipose,
yeah.
And the is it a stress toy or something? I remember it's like this sort mm-hmm. of jelly type thing.
That's it. Yeah.
Did you watch it with your partner?
No, I didn't, and I got in a bit of trouble for that.
Oh,
I must admit, yeah, yeah. So normally, because my wife kind of checked out of Doctor Who after David Tennant left. Hmm. Surprise, surprise. And of the Tennant episodes, this is one of her faves. She absolutely loves she loves Donna as a companion. She loves David Tennant, obviously. And I think she thought that I was going to call her when I watched it so she could watch it. But she found out I watched it last night. She wasn't that happy, I'll be honest with you. But yeah, she has seen this one a few times and she does really like it.
I just wonder, because I was watching it and my other half just happened to walk past to get something from the kitchen. And then I sort of felt the presence. I sort of noticed that he'd stopped in the hallway and he'd stopped and started watching it. And there is something about this era, I think, where that is the thing, isn't it? It's accessible. Like he just said, that, you know, I could see he was smiling. It was, I don't know which scene it was. It was one of the funnier moments. I can't remember. It wasn't the mime bit, but let's just use that example. So say it's something he'd caught his attention and I could just see that he was like, because again, my other half checked out after, well, around the Capaldi era, I think it was. He liked Matt, but yeah, he loved the Tennant era. I think that's the one where he really enjoyed watching it with me. Mm-hmm. And then after that, kind of drifted off a bit. But yeah, it was just nice to see, you know, that him just stop and think, oh, it's almost like a reminiscing of, oh, these two are like Catherine Tate and, you know, and yeah, I do miss that about Who. I miss watching it together rather than me having to put it on and I get cross because they're not watching it. You know, they're looking at the phone like, no, watch it. And but then I sort of, yeah, I've stopped worrying so much now. But there is something about this era, isn't there? And I think it's so watchable when it, again, this is series four now and it does feel like anybody could sit and watch this episode and know what's going on. And there are a lot of nice scenes in it. So like you said, the storyline may not be the strongest, but there are some lovely scenes in it and the character building is great. I really like the bit where Donna goes home and she's sat in the kitchen and a battle axe of her mum's going on at her. And because I just think it's so true to life. I mean, it's just, you see it and like, you sort of relate to it because I think there are mums out there that just moan and tell you, not my mum, my mum's great, but you know what I mean? I can see that happening in real life, you know, go and get a job, go and do this, moan. And she's just like, yeah. And who plays her mum? Jacqueline King, isn't it?
Jacqueline King, yeah.
She's really good, you know, really good little side characters that I, to be honest, quite often forget about. And yet she's so good with Catherine because she's really believable as that sort of nagging mum. But underneath it all, she has got a really good heart. And then you couple that, so you get that scene and you're already loving Donna. So she's already, even though you might have liked her in The Runaway Bride, she was a bit loud and whatever. This one, you're really starting to get her character and there's so much more to her and she's vulnerable and she's got this mum that's nagging her. So you're already starting to warm to Donna already. And then she goes up on the hill and meets Wilf and suddenly you've got another beautiful scene. And I think that's the point probably where I realised at the time that there was, that Catherine Tate is such a great actress. You know, she really that scene is beautiful, where she's talking about, look out for the blue box, Grandad, and you know, Wilf is a brilliant character as well, Bernard Cribbins. Those two together. So suddenly you've got this cast that are all firing on all cylinders, and Catherine fits in brilliantly in that. And I think, you know, I'll be honest, I'm one of those people that had to not eat my words necessarily, but I was concerned about her as a full-time companion. I wasn't sure if she's going to be too silly, too loud, whatever, but she really, really cements herself as being a good character in this episode, you know, even more so than she did in Runaway Bride. I love the scenes of Wilf on the hilltop. And the bit at the end, I'd forgotten about that. This is what I mean about great moments. The bit where he misses the blimmin' UFO. He's looking the other way through the telescope, and the UFO flies behind him. And you're like, no, Wilf, oh, turn around, mate. You know, moments like that is fantastic. And then, of course, Donna's in the TARDIS in the sky, and he does a little dance. It's really lovely moments that Russell writes that makes this episode, you know, a lot better than... It doesn't matter that the actual main storyline is you know, a bit thin. It's just filled with brilliant moments like that. Mm-hmm. So I could totally see why people enjoy this episode as much as they do.
Yeah, no, you're right. You can't help but like it, really. Even if you're not a fan of David Tennant as the Doctor, or you're not really a fan of the storyline, you still watch it because it moves along at a fairly decent pace.
It does, yeah.
And what you were saying about Donna's character and going back and seeing her mum and then the granddad, Wilf, who's up on the hill, he's probably up on the hill and all that stuff, that's just the magic, you know, of Russell's era, where everything is so relatable. Because I imagine that when the show came back, there were a lot of teenage girls or young women who could relate to Rose at the time, just doing a menial, you know, in her opinion, anyway, not my opinion, a menial sort of retail job, but just kind of settled into life and that's it. You know, that's just how life is for her growing up on that estate. You know, nothing amazing really happens to anybody. You know what I mean? It's that kind of normal walk of life sort of thing. And then Mickey's just a typical boyfriend, you know, nothing crazy going on. So Russell has this really good knack of making these very relatable characters. And then all of a sudden, they're like saviors of the galaxy, saviors of you know, time and space and everything. And just like, almost it feels like with a snap of the fingers, the Doctor's arrived because he's solving another case. And then that person gets intertwined into his mission. And, you know, and all, you know, before you know it, he's carrying luggage into the TARDIS for somebody.
Oh, and, another great scene. Yeah, yeah.
So that's the amazing thing. And this series as a whole, dude, I really like series 4. It's such a cracking...
Oh, it's one of my favourite series. Yeah, dude. It's a brilliant series.
Yeah. So you can see why. You can, when we talk about, and any listeners to the show that are fairly recent, not just to our show, but to Doctor Who in general, you've probably heard us and maybe other podcasters and whatnot talk about the glory days of modern Doctor Who. And you can completely see why. Around this kind of time, sort of 2007, 2008, when it was really popular, it's a very good reason why it was as popular as what it was, because David Tennant, in my opinion, was such a good Doctor, really, really good Doctor. But then on top of that, you have such an amazing writer like Russell, and he pops out in one series. This one, Fires of Pompeii, Planet of the Ood, Silence in the Library, Forest of the Dead, Midnight, Turn Left, like all of these absolutely brilliant stories. I mean, even the ones that are not as strong, like the Suntaran two-parter.
Yeah.
And The Doctor's Daughter, even those ones that are not really viewed as really good episodes of Doctor Who, you still watch them if you're on a bit of a binge, if you want to watch through some Tennant. And even like some ones that are really divisive, like The Unicorn and The Wasp, you know, those kind of stories, they were still received really well. Like critically, they were reviewed pretty good and that sort of thing. So that's one of the reasons, I think, why this story in particular, because it was that springboard into, right, we've got Donna back. She's now established herself as a decent companion. The Doctor's accepted that. Carrying the luggage into the TARDIS. We have that very funny scene.
That was like,
I just want a mate. I beg it, you know.
Yeah, not mate with me, space boy. Yeah.
So you had that stuff. And then from the next one, the fires of Pompeii, it's almost like Donna's been with the Doctor for years in the next episode. So,
and it's so fresh, isn't it? Because like you said, with the Rose stuff you had, and even Martha, you had them sort of falling in love with the Doctor. Donna's the absolute opposite. She's having none of it, you know. And they make quite a few little jokes about that over various stories, don't they? Like, no, we're not a couple and all that sort of stuff. And it's so refreshing after all the Rose and Martha stuff. Yeah. It's so needed. You know, I'm so glad that Russell, you know, took a step back and thought, yeah, I need to do something different this time. You know, it's such a great dynamic between the two of them, you know, because it's different.
And I think that's what one of the things that is good about the Doctor and Donna is that there was no, like, literally zero romantic connection at all. And there's not even like, oh, that episode they were a bit flirty, or that episode they looked at each other a certain way, or anything like that. It's just completely, they just knocked it on the head. Like, we're not having any more romantic stuff between the companion and the Doctor, because they save that in this series, I guess, for when Rose is in it, you know, especially towards the end. We turn left and Stolen Earth, you know, when the Doctor and Rose see each other at the end of the street.
Yeah.
And her theme kicks in from Murray Gold, which is beautiful. And then they run towards each other. So they kind of save it up a little bit, the romantic side of things. Okay, well, it's not really romantic, I guess, but, you know, that kind of flavour of Who from previous years, as you said.
Yeah.
So I think that's why it works so well with Donna, because they literally are just a couple of buddies just out, you know, saving worlds and cracking on with adventures. Yeah, just having fun and cracking on and stuff. So
she's definitely my favourite companion since the show returned. I absolutely adore Catherine Tate as Donna, and her and David, they just work so well together. The humour really hits the mark as well. It's not, I can't think of any time when I sort of thought, oh, that didn't land, or that wasn't funny, or, you know, they really bounce off each other brilliantly. But it's also the relationship Donna has with her mum and Wilf as well. So when we do get scenes with those guys, they're always so good. And I think the word you use was relatable. But especially Wilf. I love the character of Wilf. And I think, you know, Donna and Wilf together are magic. But it's interesting because he wasn't, it would have been Donna's dad originally, wouldn't it? So unfortunately, the actor who played Donna's father in the previous, you know, special.
Oh, Jeff Runaway Noble, Bride, the dad.
Yeah, the actor died. Well, he was ill, so he couldn't reprise the role, and he subsequently died. So Russell brought back Cribbins, who had only been in, if I'm right, I can't remember now, but didn't he just make a small cameo in, like, Voyage of the Damned or something?
That's right.
Was he even mentioned as, like, we didn't know was anything to do with Donna, did we?
Not at that point. No. I don't think so. No.
I don't think so. I mean, I can't remember. I haven't watched Voyage of the Damned for ages, but. But so, yeah, but so because of that, you know, I mean, it's really sad, the fact that we, you know, about the actor. But I wonder what the dynamic would have been if it, you know, if that, obviously he would have been brought back if things had gone to plan, but that never happened. So we get Wilf instead. And I think, you know, I just think Bernard Cribbins is so brilliant as Wilf. I just can't imagine it being as good. I mean, no offense to the actor, but I just think the relationship between Wilf and Donna is so magical. That I'm glad that we got Wilf back. I'm not glad that the actor reprised his role, but you know what I mean. Wilf's such a good character, so it would have been interesting seeing how things would have gone if he hadn't been brought back. But he's just brilliant, isn't he?
Oh, he's so good.
Again, so lovable.
Yeah,
you just love him, don't you? When he's doing his little dance, looking at the sky.
Oh, at the end, when he sees them in the TARDIS and he starts, go on, girl, go away.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, because he plays like the opposite to Donna's mum, doesn't he? Donna's mum's very regimental. She's like, you should be doing this. You've got to get your life together. Yeah, you've got to be doing this. Where he's like, you know, when she takes the flask up towards the beginning of the episode, she takes him a flask of tea and stuff, and he's like, oh, she nagging you again. So you can tell that... He knows exactly what his daughter's like. He knows that she's a nag. He knows that she gets on Donna's case a lot. So he's like the friendly ear and the comforting ear that Donna needs, Because I think if he wasn't there, then that would be a very different dynamic. That would be more, I don't know, it would be a bit more of a mother-daughter thing, a bit like Jackie and Rose. It would be just exactly, a carbon copy almost of that kind of thing. Because Jackie, she had a habit, you know, she was a bit naggy, wasn't she, from time to time and stuff like that. So you needed that other person to provide a bit of a combination, really, of like that kind of loving, supportive, understanding attitude versus the mum who's very much, I don't care, just sort your life out sort of thing.
Yeah.
And he actually, yeah, I mean, fair play, they progressed his character to be very important in the end. I mean, he's, Wilf's character is like pivotal in the finale two-parter and stuff, so.
It had to be you.
Oh, God, don't.
Oh, no.
So I'm totally with you, dude. Like the characters, Donna's mum, Sylvia and Wilf and stuff, just hitting the mark, like 10 out of 10 for characters. And I think for a story like this where there isn't much of a big complex plot going on, you need to rely on those characters to push the story through. Because if you just relied on Miss Foster and the Adipose, you'd have a very thin story. You know, it wouldn't very really. Plot, yeah, there's not much travel there. So, yeah, it's good.
I think what this episode's designed to do is just really be a nice introduction to Series 4, isn't it? It's not trying to do anything amazing. It's not trying to set up a million story arcs. It's just there to get the Doctor and Donna back together, and off they go into their adventures in Series 4. And that's all it's there to do, and it does it really well, I have to say. Like I said, anybody could sit and watch this. And there's so many fun moments, like the bit where they keep missing each other at the start as well. It's done just enough, because that could become tiresome if they'd dragged it out anymore. But the bit where, you know, he looks up over the desk, goes down, she pops up over her desk, and they just keep missing each other, and the TARDIS lands by her car, and all these little moments where you're just like, oh no, when are they going to finally meet each other? And when they finally do, that scene's become quite iconic, isn't it? When she's behind the glass door pointing at her face and stuff. I mean, that scene's brilliant. And I suppose at the time I couldn't enjoy it for what it was, and I loved it this time. I was really at the biggest grin on my face, because you know what's going to happen. You know that Miss Foster must be watching them at this point, because it goes on for a while. And Murray's music, you know, it is really good in this story. I think he's almost gives that scene, it reminded me of like an old black and white film with it sort of the sort of brass elements to the music. I don't know if you know what I mean, but it's a bit like a sort of Buster Keaton and Laurel Hardy movie where every time they hit a sort of mark, the music hits the mark. It was really, really, really well done. You know, everybody is firing on all cylinders in this, basically. You've got Russell writing a really good, accessible story that anybody could watch. You've got the actors absolutely hitting the mark in their performance. You've got Murray's music. It's just, you can see why we're at peak Who at the minute. Everything's coming together and just working so well, you know.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Yeah.
And the production's good as well. It didn't, I mean, this is now 12 years old. What was it, 2008? 13 years old. You know, it still looks pretty good. If I had to minor quibbles about a production, it'd be that they use that blimmin' corridor again with the, you know, like there's that sort of.
Oh, Rivers Prison.
Yeah, that blimmin' corridor. They use that so much. But I mean, gosh, we can forgive stuff like that in Doctor Who. We're kind of used to it. But yeah, otherwise. Production looks good. The Adipose CGI is fine. I mean, I didn't think it looked amazing at the time, but it doesn't look bad. You know, when they're all going across the road, it still looks okay. You know,
yeah, it doesn't look terrible. I mean, it's not gonna. Yeah, it's not gonna win any awards for for like.
I suppose why they get away with it is the design, isn't it? So although the CGI is a bit, it's okay. The design is so cute that it kind of carries it.
Yeah, and that's it's the cute factor for the Adipose that sells that, really. It doesn't have to be amazing. In terms of CGI and stuff like that, the special effects house that was working on it at the time, The Mill.
The Mill, yeah.
Yeah, they had a real rough time with the, you know, the scene where all the Adipose are basically walking through a street in Wales, supposed to be London, and you see one sliding down the front of the taxi, and there's thousands of them, potentially millions. They were they really struggled to get that, so they had to draft in like an extra team of CGI artists, and they had to use some extra software. So the special effects company in New Zealand, Weta Digital, who created this app called, or this software called Massive, which they used on the Lord of the Rings movies, they had to get that software in order to get that shot to work and all that sort of stuff. So, but you can tell that that was just something that they did to make that shot look as good as it could be, because otherwise you'd have to scale that down a lot. You'd only see a few on screen and all that stuff. It wouldn't have really worked as well. You really needed to feel like there was thousands and thousands of these things, you know, making their way through the streets and stuff. So although the quality, like the fidelity of the effect, isn't quite there, because were they filming in HD back then? They were, not, weren't they?
Yeah, I don't.
Oh, no, they weren't. Yeah, it wasn't until the first special that they started filming in HD. So, yeah, it was still SD at this point. So although the fidelity is not quite there, the actual effect still sells really well. You still get the feeling that these little things have got life in them, and they're very cute. Like the noise helps as well, like the cute little noise and all that stuff. They're a cute little thing. They are cute.
Yeah, like you said, it's good enough to sell the idea. You don't sit there and think, oh, man, that looks bad. You know, it still totally works on screen. It just is a bit of its time. But on the other hand, the actual UFO looks pretty good. it's huge, and it does remind me a lot of the UFO from Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I think that's intentional. It's a lot like that in design. But that CGI looks pretty decent, I thought, for the time. I was like, oh, it's got a lot of detail on it. Yeah. I mean, compare that to the awful flying saucer that we got in Husbands of River Song. Remember that red? Effects wise, it's you can tell effort's gone into it. Let's put it that way. It looks good.
Yeah, Regia. And they didn't just bin off the adipose thing either. It gets mentioned a couple of times towards the end, like Adipose 3 was one of the planets that was lost that they rescue back again, back when we fast forward in time, but we go to the end of the series and we get to Journey's End. They mention Adipose 3 as one of the planets, you know, like, Poosh, all that Poosh. Lot, all that
Clom.
Stuff. Clom. Yeah, so they didn't just bin it off as a cute little one-trick pony. They do bring it back up. And I think you see an adipose somewhere else in Doctor Who. Again, I'm pretty sure you see one. Oh, yeah, so at the end of, at the end of Journey's End, I think it is.
Yeah.
Where? Oh, no, it's not Journey's End. Forgive me. Hold on. Is it the end of... Which, the end of time. The End of Time Part 2. You know where the Doctor sets up Jack with the guy that was on...
Yeah, Russell Tovey.
Yes. You know, they're in the bar, aren't they?
Oh, is there an adipose in there?
I'm pretty sure there's like a little adipose walking along the top of the bar. Something, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, you might be right.
Yeah. So we get a very quick
Alonso,
cameo.
Isn't it?
Alonso, that's it, yeah. So I think we get a very, because in that scene at the end, it's a bit like the cantina in The New Hope in Star Wars. It's like this alien bar with all these different species knocking around. So I'm pretty sure we see a tiny little adipose knocking along the end of the bar. I think. I could be wrong.
I'll look out for that next time. I'll have to have a look out for that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm worried that I didn't watch this properly when it first aired, and which is why I'm thinking I may not have watched this since, because I thought that Miss Foster survived. So I was quite surprised when she plummets to her death at the end of it when I watched this yesterday. And the reason I know that I thought she survived is that I went to see Sarah Lancashire in a play, and I met her at the stage door afterwards, and she was lovely. I got a pic with her. And I remember saying to her, oh, well, I'm really glad you're in Doctor Who, because I'm a big Doctor Who fan. And of course, Miss Foster survived, so you could come back. And I remember she did give me a funny look. And it was only yesterday when she plummeted to the ground that I thought, oh, I think I know why she looked at me funny now. Because she doesn't survive. She plummets to her death. So I don't know why I thought. Yeah. But anyway, but I remember saying that to Sarah, so I obviously didn't watch this properly when it first went out, which is really strange. But I kept thinking, oh, maybe in a minute she'll be, you'll see her being carted into an ambulance and she'll still be alive. And yeah, weird. Mm. Anyway, so yeah, no, Miss Foster won't be coming back.
And, yeah, she definitely plummets to her death, unfortunately.
That's strange. That was a bit of an odd moment yesterday when I was rewatching this. Kept thinking, well, when's she going to pop back up? Weird.
Touching briefly on Sarah Lancashire, you mentioned earlier that you thought that she underplayed that a little bit. I think I agree with you, dude. I think there was a, she was very formal. She played it like a businesswoman pretty much all the way through. The only little tiny glimpses of pushing it a little bit was when she's floating up in the air and she's like shouting down to the adipose and stuff. And then even when she dies, there are a couple of Scooby-Doo moments in this episode. That was one of them. You know, when the beam cuts off and then she's there still in air for a few seconds. It's like a cartoon, isn't it? Like the old coyote when he falls off a cliff. He's suspended in air for a while before he falls. Like a Scooby-Doo cartoon. We had that. Even then, she just sort of looks up and a little scream as she goes down. I would like to, same as you, I'd like to have seen her push the envelope a little bit.
I just think she could have been more threatening. And I think what she's trying to do, and I kind of respect her for it, is she's trying to play it straight. So she's like, okay, I'm a villainous, you know, female character. I'm evil. And I've got this dastardly plan, but I'm not going to play it all. You know, I think she's trying to underplay it rather than overplay it. And I think that's a good thing. But I think she could have just pushed it a little bit more the other way. So I'm trying to think of what was that Sarah Jane episode we watched where you've got, I forget the actress's name. She played the TARDIS in The Doctor's Wife. What's her name?
I know who you mean. Yes.
Doctor Who. Anyway, you got her. She was in a Sarah Jane Adventure playing the villain, wasn't she? And she really hammed it up and was over the top. And I remember her saying, like, oh, she just didn't get that at all. She just went way over the top. And I think what Sarah Lancashire is trying to do is the opposite. She's trying not to be that sort of pantomime female villain, but she's sort of actually underplayed it just a little bit too much because she's got the look at everything. And you just think, yeah, she could be really sinister. She just hasn't quite pushed it far enough.
Yeah, that's the years of Corrie, mate. She's got the soapy kind of thing going on. But you're thinking of Saran Jones as the Mona Lisa painting. That's it, yeah.
She was way over the top in that. So she's gone the other way.
Right.
And just played, you know. So, yeah, it's a shame. Because I think she is such a good actress. I've seen her in a lot of other things like that, Happy Valley and that. I know. And she is good at this, don't get me wrong. She does give a good performance. But I just wanted her to be a bit more evil, if you like. And there are a couple of moments that I thought, you know, you said about the Scooby-Doo moments. So there's this scene when the reporter, what's the reporter called? That girl that they keep tying to the chair. It's quite a funny moment when she escapes and gets immediately captured again.
Yeah, her character name was Penny Carter.
Penny Carter.
Yeah, there's a little story about that.
Oh, okay. Well, just quickly say, so I thought there's a bit when Miss Foster says, when you find the Dr. Donna, just kill them. Just get rid of them. You know, don't mess around. And I thought, but you say that, but why are you keeping this reporter tied up? She would have just, like, what was the point? Why doesn't she just kill her? She's so quick to want to kill everyone else. Why is she keeping this reporter tied up? I thought it didn't make sense. But go on, what's your little story? So Verona Joseph is the actress.
Yeah, so the actress was quite funny. There was a couple of bits where she got free and then they tie her up again and she's like, oh, you're kidding me. Yeah. And at the end she kicks off. But anybody that has read the book that we recommend all the time, The Writer's Tale by Russell, there's a section there where he's talking about the new companion for series 4, which is a new companion called Penny Carter. And she was meant to be someone quite similar to Donna, I suppose. She was in her 30s. I think she was a bit strong-willed, like Donna's character. So that was going to be the thing. They were going to introduce this new Penny character, but then Catherine Tate was like, actually, I'd like to be in Doctor Who full time, please. So they dropped the Penny Carter thing and then brought Donna in. But then, you know, as a little sort of internal funny Easter egg between Russell and those guys, I suppose, they named that reporter Penny Carter.
Yeah, you kind of get that feeling, don't you? Because it's a, you've got this character in there, and I kept wondering what the point of her was. You get the feeling there was more to that character, or there was going to be more. So I'm not surprised to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and then I just want to finish up. So two things to finish up. So the first one, and you mentioned it already, was Murray's music.
Yeah.
Ah, dude. I so miss the days of having that kind of that fun, comedic, but also this kind of bombastic theme every now and then. And, mate, it just, this is why, it's one of the ingredients of why I really love Russell's era. It's, don't get me wrong, Murray's music was at times a little bit overpowering at times. And I think we've gone from one extreme to the other. I think in Jodie's era, we've had the music has tended to be a bit more atmospheric, not much in the way of this stuff by Murray, which
themes.
Is not, yeah. So I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but we've gone one extreme to the other. So, however, Murray's music just fits this style of story just so well. And the Donna's theme is really good. It's so catchy. I had earworm after watching this for ages of Donna's theme. And then just some of the other bits as well, like we have, like at the end, when Rose turns around and we have that sort of foreboding.
Oh, the doomsday.
Yeah, the doomsday stuff. It's Murray's stuff. At times, most of the time, Murray hit the mark with his music.
Yeah.
It was great. And then the other thing that I thought was pretty sweet was some of the scenes where I thought the build-up was really good into the Doctor and with the Doctor and Donna finally meeting. They stretched that out quite a while, for quite a while. And initially, I think the last time I watched this, I remember thinking, it took ages for them to meet up. And it does take a while, but it was done really well. So the two scenes that spring to mind, and it was the other Scooby-Doo moment, is when they're in the office. One of them stands up, the other one sits down and...
Yeah.
You know, they miss each other by a split second as they turn around and walk out and stuff. But the one that was really cool for me is when the Doctor's chasing the van out in the street and he's got that little contraption thing that was just really cool. And then Donna's out in the street. She's trying to find out what's happened to what's her name? Is it Stacey? No, not Stacey. Yeah. Who's the girl that she goes to see to talk about adipose?
It's Stacey, isn't it?
Yeah. So she's out there trying to find out what's going on. And then there's that really cool camera angle. They've put the camera on a really high crane and you can see the two streets that would eventually meet, but they're just standing just out of eyeshot. And then you see them slowly walk off in opposite directions. It was like the build up to them two actually meeting up was really good. So, direction wise by James Strong. Very, very cool. Very cool stuff.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it? Because not only do they keep missing each other, but I like the fact that we're getting to see the similarities between the Doctor and Donna as well. So they're kind of using the same excuses to get into the building and they've got the same plan. And so you're sort of thinking, okay, so they're both on the same wavelength. But they obviously haven't quite met yet. But yeah, no, it's fun. And I think they do, it does take a while for them to meet, but they just about get it right, I think. It was fun, that build up. Yeah. Definitely. The only things I've got left really, I thought it was odd that Donna threw the keys in a bin at the end. I wasn't sure about that. I'm sure Russell could have thought of a better way to, I don't know. I just didn't get that. Why would you throw car keys in a bin? That didn't make sense. Asking for trouble, mate.
Yeah.
Asking for trouble. I know it's an excuse to bring Rose into it because that's the only reason I can think of because normally you just say, I've hidden the keys on the tire, it's cars around the corner or something, you know what I mean? Anyway, but that was a bit strange. But one thing I noticed was a nice little reference to survival, which again I never picked up on the first time around watching this. So the Doctor talks about cat flaps don't just let things in, they let things out, which is a reference to survival, I'm pretty sure, because I remember before Survival aired it was going to be called Cat Flap and fans were like, oh, what dreadful title, like, oh, I hope they changed that. And of course they did, they changed it to Survival. But the reason it was called Cat Flap is because Rhoda Monroe said, well, the thing is with cat flaps is they don't just let things out, they could also let things in. So although it's the opposite thing to what the Doctor says, I'm pretty sure that is a reference. And when you think about that, it's really sinister, isn't it? You know, the cat flap doesn't just let things out of your house. It can let things in, you know. So I liked that. It's a nice little nod to the classic era. I thought, I'm pretty sure it must be, you know.
Yeah.
But no, overall, I think, yeah, everything's firing all cylinders. Everybody looks like they're having fun in this. Even Murray just seems like he's loving scoring this one. Yeah.
Indeedy. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, scores on the doors time. It is you to go first.
Yeah, I'll give it a 7.5 out of 10. I can't quite go to an 8. And I'm not saying 7.5 is a bad score, but I'm not going to an 8 just because I don't think the story itself is that strong. But it is a really fun watch, and I did enjoy it a lot. But yeah, 7.5, it's just not quite an 8 for me. It's not strong enough. Story's not strong enough to be an 8, I don't think. I don't know.
Okay. I'm going to go with an 8 on this, bud.
You going with an 8?
I'm going with a full fat adipose 8 yeah. for this one. It's I just think it's such a lovely watch, mate. It's got all the ingredients are there. You just can't help but smile and laugh and all that stuff. So yes, while the story itself is nothing to write home about, it's the performances and the direction, the music, and just the chemistry between David Tennant and Catherine Tate is so good. It's such a great watch. It's a really good. I love that this is such a what's the word for kicking off a new series. I just love that it's its own thing, almost, with the exception of the final little bit with Rose. It's just a really cool, isolated, fun Doctor Who watch, and it reminds me, and I know my nostalgia goggles are adding a point onto this probably, but it just reminds me of such a great time of when I just could not wait to watch the next episode of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
You know, it just takes me back to that point where, like you said, we've said like a billion times, like peak Doctor Who, and there's a good reason for that. So, yeah, an 8 for me.
Do you know what? You've talked me round. I'm going to add on an extra slice of fat. I'll tell you for why. You are right. The thing is, 7.5 is what I normally score like a Torchwood episode or something that's good but not that great. So right. I think I have to go to an 8 because it is better than that. And it is a fun watch. So you've taught me around. It is an 8, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. So an 8 from us then. 8 from him, 8 from me. What did our awesome listeners think? Let's crack on. We had a fair few audio reviews in, so thank you very much, guys, for doing that. We're going to kick off, as usual, from Down Under. It is Sammy Satin.
Hey, Gary and Adam. Sammy Satin here. So, partners in crime. I have a Sonic pen character options, adipose, a stuffed toy adipose, a collection of Big Chief Studios adipose, some adipose putty, an adipose pen, and some adipose headphones. I think I'm less likely adipose. They're so cute! In fact, the diet plan sounds okay, except for the part about fully converting humans into adipose. I think Miss Foster, aka Matron Cophelia, is very good. Penny Carter, the journalist, is either not very well acted or well written because she doesn't seem very smart and a bit whiny. Wilf is awesome. Sylvia reminds me of my mother. Donna is also awesome. And the 10th Doctor, well, it goes without saying how awesome he is. It's a fun story, so I give it 10 adipose out of 10. See ya.
A full fat 10.
A 10, my word. Yeah. Actually, Sammy makes a good point there. I don't know that the reporter woman would have been a strong enough companion if she had gone full time. I don't know. She's fine as a side character, but I can't imagine her as a full-time companion. Certainly nowhere near as good as Catherine.
Well, I don't think that was the actress they had in mind.
Oh, right. It's
just the character name.
Character.
Yeah. Gotcha. They could have had her as the companion. I'm not quite sure, but I don't think so. Yeah.
No, okay.
But Sammy rocking the old collectibles there, the old adipose. Got a few of them. Yeah. And a 10 out of 10, crikey. Nice one, Sammy. Glad you enjoyed that one. Moving on, this is Neil Campbell.
Hi, guys. How's it going? Partners in Crime, a really solid opening for Series 4. Which I think is a really good series. It's an episode that is fun and enjoyable. And it's one that I've always enjoyed, and I think I always will. Donna, the reintroduction of Donna is really well played and well handled. And Catherine Tate is super. and as is David Tennant, and there's loads of like funny moments within the story without turning it into too much of a comedy, if you know what I mean. And I really enjoy that, like, you be health, I'll be safety. That sort of carry on was funny. And then the scenes of, you know, Donna's at the customer's house and she says, I'm dumping him, you know, stuff like that. Like, I mean, it's funny. And I really think it works, especially the scene, you know, across the room between the doctor and Donna. And it's the start of a great friendship. And on this story, there's some great soundtrack as well. Like, you've got Life Amongst the Distant Stars, which is superb. And also there's that theme. It's played whenever the doctor is explaining to Donna at the TARDIS, you know, what happened to Martha and stuff. And like, he invites her on board. And it's that theme. It's so good. It's played loads in series 4, and it's such a shame it wasn't actually selected on the official soundtrack. I can't believe it. But sorry, I'm rambling. So all in, I'm going to give this story an 8 out of 10. Cheers.
Another thick slice of 8.
Another 8. Yeah, and you are correct, Neil, as well. In my opinion as well, the chemistry is what makes it between those guys. And yeah, we picked up on the music as well. That theme that you mentioned is a cracker. It's very good. So Murray doing the business. So thank you very much, Neil. An 8 from Neil. Moving on. This is that dude that we've seen from time to time. Mr. Adam.
Hello, Gary. Hello, Adam. Happy spring. The sun is out. It's shining. It's a nice, glorious Monday. As I'm recording this anyway, it's glorious to see. And hope you guys are keeping well. So I hear you guys were reviewing Partners in Crime. And I must say, this is a good one. Russell's dialogue is excellent, it's great, and the fact that David Tennant and Catherine Tate bring this dialogue, it's electrifying, the chemistry, it's what makes this episode, and even fun when they're both separately investigating adipose industry, the scenes in the office, and great comedic, but also, you know, really fun Doctor Who moments, it's good. The adipose themselves, yeah! The pating of the Russell T Davies era, you could argue, the cute thing that, you know, will appear on social media and plushies and all that kind of good stuff. So that's fun. Yeah, I give this. Yeah, it's a good one. 7 out of 10. Solid opener. See you guys soon and enjoy your season 8 box sets.
Box.
So, see what you did
very
there.
Very good.
Very good ads.
Okay, a 7 from Ad.
Yes.
Mr. Mamoon bringing the... and you are right. It's almost like the... The adipose are definitely the cuteness factor for things like merchandise. I don't think they were that naive to think that it would end up on plushies and all that stuff. And yeah, I read you. But thank you very much, dude. A 7 from Adam. Moving on. This is Mr. Seb Lane.
Hello, Gary and Adam. It's me, Seb. I know I've been away for quite some time, but I'm back now, hopefully, for some audio reviews. So this week it's Partners in Crime, which I think is a lovely episode. It's very refreshing, and Donna is one of my favourite companions, and this episode is just a lot of fun. It's a very feel-good episode. I can probably stick this one on whenever I like. The adipose are very cute, and I love them. They're definitely one of the best sort of just light-hearted villains in the show, in my opinion. I think Miss Foster is a very good sort of head of the villains, if you know what I mean. She's quite menacing, but again, she is quite sweet deep down. I think the side cast were good. Penny Carter, she's one of my favourite characters. She's just got a bit of fun, isn't she? But it's a brilliant story. So there you go. Stay safe, guys.
A brilliant story.
Seb, loving it.
Yeah. No score from Seb, but I'm going to use the word brilliant and translate that into an 8.
Yeah, okay.
That's our decision. Yeah. Thank you very much, Seb. Glad you enjoyed that one. Yeah, it is a feel-good one. Stick this on when you're feeling down. Have a bit of a laugh. It's all good. Thank you very much. Moving on. This is Joe Turner.
Partners in Crime is a fantastic opener. It gives us a new family in the form of Donna, Wilfred and Sylvia. They have such great chemistry and are incredibly realistic. The plot is a bit unoriginal, basically just about weight loss, yet it's executed really well. Also, the adipose are so cute and simplistic, which makes them memorable. Miss Foster juxtaposes the Doctor so well. She commands the scene in which she is in, making her brilliant to watch. There were some hilarious scenes, like when Donna starts wagging the glass. Or, my personal favourite, which is the iconic scene where Donna and the Doctor see one another through the glass and mime to each other. It's hilarious. Catherine Tate is fantastic. She proves all the haters wrong and gives a wonderfully versatile performance, expressing the emotion and comedy with pure class. Finally, my favourite scene has to be Wilf waving Donna off, because it epitomises the joy of seeing someone be able to go off and travel through time and space. To see that via a sweet old grandfather is so heartwarming. It's credit to Russell and his excellent writing. And that cliffhanger with Rose, well, what can I say other than it blows my mind every time. So overall, I give this episode a 9.5 out of 10. Thank you.
Ooh.
9.5.
Almost up there with Sammy. For a near perfect.
A little slice of fat off.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Joe. A 9.5, dude. Nice one. Moving on, this is TARDISnet 66.
Partners in Crime. I never remembered this story being as good as this story was when I rewatched it. I remembered it being good enough, but I think it's Russell's writing and the fact that this story plays to his major strengths. I just loved watching this story and had so much fun. Catherine Tate is back as Donna and she is great. She's playing a more down-to-earth character with her own troubles and issues and feels very relatable with her chemistry with Wilf and with David Tennant as the 10th Doctor, who is always such a captivating presence and so much fun to watch. There's a reason he's my favourite Doctor. It's an easy-to-watch, fun introduction. I have to say I've never been a fan of the Adipose, as I've never really liked the more cute and humorous aliens as villains, as for me, it very much diminishes the threat. But that being said, I think the threat of Miss Foster does elevate the threat level somewhat. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
An 8?
Another 8.
Yeah, I think you are right there, Mr. TN66. I think the Adipose were purpose. I don't think they were ever meant to be menacing in any way, were they?
No. I think that's the thing. You wonder if they're going to suddenly switch, don't you?
Yeah, like little werewolf Adipose, like big teeth and claws. And,
yeah.
But yeah, you're right.
They're quite cool.
Yeah, you are right. Thank you very much, dude. This is Mr. Simon Hodgson.
Hi, guys. Here's my review of the Series 4 opener, Partners in Crime. I think it's a great reintroduction to a companion that people had mixed feelings over when she debuted in The Runaway Bride. The continuity and humour was very good in this one, I think. Both the leads shine throughout. Unfortunately, the story itself lets it down for me, and the Adipose come off as rather daft, in my opinion. Although from a marketing point of view, they possibly felt they could sell loads of these as toys back in the day, I think. I suppose depending on whether you are pro-Rose or not, the scene where Donna unknowingly was talking to Rose at the end was probably a bigger talking point than the episode itself on the forums and social media back then, which doesn't really make it a good episode in my opinion. Not one of Russell T. Davies' best stories, but as Donna has now been written into the show for a whole series, it finally starts to be arguably the best of Tennant's era for me. I give the Partners in Crime a 6 out of 10 then. Cheers.
A 6. Okie dokie. Simon, that was... yeah, but you are right, though. This does kick off one of the best eras of Russell. The best part of Russell's era, to a degree. Depending on how you look at it. But this was... yeah, I read you. A 6, though. Come on, Simon.
I can't remember if Rose was a big talking point. It probably was, but... We didn't have Twitter in 2008, did we?
We didn't.
Or did we? I don't know. I don't remember it being a massive talking point, but it probably was, yeah.
Yeah, you're probably right. Mm. I don't think that derails the episode, though. I think it's still... Like, whenever you talk about Partners in Crime, you don't talk about the Rose cameo as much as you do, like, the comical scene with them two through the glass and
exactly,
all that stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's pretty cool. But a 6, though, from Simon. Nice one, dude. And lastly, the last audio clip. This is from Martin Arnold.
Partners in Crime. Speaking of which, the roundtable episode of the week was a lot of fun. Hopefully we won't have to wait another 300 episodes because I shall run out of regenerations. Partners in Crime, the episode is great. Season 4 is the second best of the new Who season, second only to Season 1. Controversial? I don't know. And Donna is the best companion, and Catherine Tate blew us all away, certainly blew me away. I was not expecting her to be this good. I have to be honest. I thought she would, you know, prove to be not as funny because I wasn't a fan of her comedy show. But there you go, you know. Chiswick's finest does a great turn throughout the entire season. I love the way she's stuck between Wilf and her mum and the way they play off each other. It's great stuff. Really sort of down to earth, but at the same time, you know, she's got her head in the clouds. And that's what a classic companion should be. The story, the aliens, yeah, okay, that's kind of goofy. It does spoil it a bit, but it does introduce the missing planets motif. And, of course, at the end, we get Rose turning up. Didn't expect that, although I think the papers did kind of give the game away, if I recall correctly. But it's a great episode, drowned out by Murray Gold's really loud soundtrack. Oh, BBC. I don't know who they've got mixing. Someone with bad hearing, obviously. But anyways, great stuff. Thanks and take care.
You're not wrong there, Martin. But I have to say, though, I've seen worse episodes where Murray's music was really in your face and almost detracts from what the actors were saying. But I don't think this one's too bad. But I read you, though.
The early Torchwood episode, I have to keep constantly turning it up and down because the music's so much louder than dialogue. But yeah.
Yeah. But no score from Martin, but it sounds like you you like this one quite a lot. And yeah, you're right. I think, like you were saying, Bud, we had Twitter, but I don't think it was a the powerhouse that it is today.
Yeah.
But certainly there would have been a leak of some sort for Rose being in it. You know, there would have been.
I'm pretty sure I knew that she was going to pop up. I vaguely remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's the audio reviews. Thank you very much, guys, for taking the time to do that. Very much appreciated as always. Let's crack on with the socials. Before I get to that, though, we did have one on email from the dudes over at the Wandering Slitheen.
Oh.
So Joe says it's all right. 10 is great and so is Donna, but the start is not going to wow you. Some of the CGI is a bit wonky, but that can't be helped. The story is just a lot of fun and the look of the adipose is adorable. One thing that does get on my nerves is the jolly music that plays throughout the entire thing.
Oh, really?
Overall, this was a great start to an amazing series of Doctor Who, a 7. Out of 10.
Oh,
and Samuel says, Partners in Crime is a great fun episode with a very strange story that works surprisingly well. Living Fat is such a bonkers premise, but somehow they make it work. You can tell from the off that they are not trying to tell a serious story and they're going to blow, not going to blow people's minds. It's just a fun romp and a brilliantly hilarious first proper pair up of my favourite TARDIS team. The story can be a bit cheesy in places, but it understates, but it understands that and accepts it, making it a fun, if unspectacular, start to a fun and spectacular series, a 7 out of 10.
Cool.
Apparently, Raph from The Wandering Slitheen couldn't remember it, so I didn't write a review.
Yeah.
And a last honourable mention, this is the very first time that my wife has officially sent in a review.
Oh, yeah.
Wifey, she says, I'd say it's a solid 8. It's funny as hell. In quote unquote, are we interrupting you? The standout line gets me every time. So Mrs. Gary, wifey, gives it an 8.
Well deserved.
Yes, thank you very much. Over on the socials, on Twitter, we had Morgan, a good friend Morgan, says, fantastic opener. Donna is one of my fave companions and Catherine Tate just jumps back into the role. Brilliant writing, interjected with so much comedy and heart from Russell. And he gets up the chain of events for Series 4 wonderfully. 9 splatted Miss Fosters out of 10. Ricky Orr says it is one of my fave series openers. Strong performances from all involved. And it's an utter treat getting to see Sarah Lancashire in Who. David and Catherine work so well together. And that window scene is one of the best.
Yeah.
Tin and Sonic says a fun opener, but nothing stand out for me. A good reintroduction to Donna and a solid start for Series 4. A 7 out of 10. Mm-hmm. The dudes over at the Lost on Gallifrey podcast say it's good fun, but it doesn't grip me as much as previous openers. Everyone seems to have a more fun with this than me. Unhappy face. However, Tennant and Tate are great from the very first second. The adipose spaceship looks insanely good, and the two Sonics blew my mind at the time.
Oh yeah, the Sonic pen.
Indeed, yes. Our writer, Jordan Shortman, says, while it's a brilliant series opener, the story itself doesn't grip me. What sells it is the performance from David Tennant and Catherine Tate. This is my fave series of New Who and Donna, my fave modern companion. A good opener that sets up a great series.
Yeah. Yes.
Chippy T, it is the best companion opener ever. Is Donna the best companion? Are all the characters nicely fleshed out? Is this one of RTD's best? Do they look like they're having a good fun? Has Donna got enough hats? Does the Doctor just want a mate? Yes to all of them from me. A 9 out of 10. A 9. Daniel Fox. A really strong fun opener that brings a breath of fresh air to the show in the form of Donna, as well as the iconic Wilfred Mott. 8 adipose out of 10.
Nice.
Titan Sci-Fi Tom says, hi, love the episode. Great reintroduction of Donna and Dr. Miming through the window. Cute little adipose and spooky rose. 9 out of 10. Spooky rose. Yeah.
Spooky rose, yeah.
Nick H says, a light and quite frothy intro for proper Donna and some great comedy from the two leads. No stakes, just fun. And sometimes that's okay when the end of the season is so big. 7.
True.
And lastly on Twitter, Hendrix Chaplin says, one of the best openers. Catherine and David have amazing on-screen chemistry together, playing off each other incredibly with such vibrant and infectious energy. This is a good, solid comedic filler that works on its own aims of light-hearted entertainment. And we had a few over on Facebook. Charlie Turner, quote unquote, the fat just walks away. Interesting ep, pretty good. And funny starts of series 4. I don't think anyone expected Rose to pee near the end, though. And that miming scene is perhaps the funniest scene since the shouting of Margaret in Boomtown. Not the strongest of series openers, but it gets a good 9 out of 10.
Crikey.
Chloe Anderson, I really like this one. Simple, funny and enjoyable and sets up the show well. It's nice how it shows a connection between the Doctor and Donna that is fully realised at the end of the series. The nod to the Centauran two-parter with the Atmos sticker in the taxi.
I noticed that.
I didn't notice that, yeah. And Rose appearing at the end shows how well the series was planned. Toby Coleman, unfortunately, this one suffers from overwatching. It's still enjoyable, but the jokes can only make you laugh so many times. I love the Doctor Donna elements, and I think Miss Foster is a great villain. The only part I don't like is Stacey's death. 7 adipose out of 10.
Poor Stacey.
Lewis Blackmore. One word epitomises why I love this episode, and that is fun.
Phew.
Brings the dream team back together with the 10th Doctor and Donna. RTD provides the goods. A really strong runaround with plenty of action, which is a win in my book. Goes on to give it a 7.5. And lastly, Joseph Howarth says, I really do like this episode. Don't think it was the strongest of season openers, but it's a fun little romp. But I think the problem is not the fact that the adipose are bad creatures in Doctor Who. It's more to do with the fact that they aren't really menacing and the episode suffers a little bit because of that fact. Otherwise, it's a decent watch. A 7 out of 10.
Oh, cool.
Dude, score's fairly good as we expected for this one. I would say on average, we're talking about an 8.5 on average. We had quite a few 7s, a couple of 9s, a 10, a few 8s. Yeah, I'd say about an 8. 8.5 is the average.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely light, isn't it, this one?
Indeedy, yes. Thank you very much, guys. Next week, dude, what we got?
So next week, yeah, we're kicking off Series 5 of the Sarah Jane Adventures. The last series, dude. Are we ready for that? Actually, it's like half a series as well.
I think so.
Anyway, the episode's called Sky.
Yeah. As in Sky TV? The sky in the sky at night? Or
Sky.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah, that's going to be good. But it's going to be bittersweet because, as you said, we're coming up to the final bit of SJ.
I'm not ready.
Yes. In fact, I think we've got 3 left, haven't we? This one
really?
And 2 others. I think so.
Oh, no.
Mate.
I'm just going to go, but it's when we finish, I'm just going to go back and watch them all again. I am.
Well, that's not a bad way to spend your day.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, dude. So next week, Sky. Right, let's wrap there, mate, for 302.
All righty.
Thank you for coming back and listening to another week at the Big Blue Box. It's great to have you all here. That was episode 302. Thank you so much to the guys that provided your audio reviews. It was very much appreciated taking the time to do that. And obviously the rest of you that have emailed in or have got in touch over the socials. Thank you very much for that. Next week, we're back to the Sarah Jane Adventures, as Adam said, with the episode Sky. So get your DVDs out and give that a watch, because we'll be asking for your thoughts as always. In the meantime, you can listen to all of our episodes over on the website bigblueboxpodcast.co.uk, or if you get your podcast on an app like Spotify or Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Pocket Casts, any of those sorts of things, we're on those. Just give us a search, Big Blue Box, you'll find us on there. We'd love to have you as a subscriber. That way you won't miss a show when they land every Friday. And if you've got a minute to leave a rating or a review, that would be awesome, because that helps us out loads and loads. Also on the website, you can check out all of the awesome articles from our writing team. Lots of reviews and opinion posts over there. So check that out. We're on the socials too, Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. There are links on the website, or just do a search for us on those things. Come give us a like and a follow so we can chat with you about Doctor Who throughout the week. And we have a free Discord server as well. There's a link on the website to that. Come and hang out and chat Doctor Who and all that other stuff about Doctor Who. Also, don't forget. Do not forget. This is important. Don't forget to check out Adam's channel over on YouTube. It is, in fact, called The Geek's Handbag.
That's the one. Yeah, I've been cracking up some lots of new vids on there lately. So go and have a look.
It's amazing. Yeah. I'm being serious. I don't sound serious, but I am being serious. It's amazing. Go and check out Adam's channel, The Geek's Handbag. Loads and loads of very cool videos for you to check out over there. The recent ones, the autograph collections, like, and then just, he's got so many things about, you know, just reviews and unboxings and all that sort of stuff. So go and grab yourself a cup of tea, get comfortable, and check out Adam's channel. He's on the socials too. Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. Give him a search for The Geek's Handbag. And let's all have a chat during the episodes. Yes. Right. Until next week, my name's Gary.
My name's Adam.
And remember, it's...